coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
And welcome to Hagman. This is the Hagman Report for today. It is Friday, January 10th, 2019, day number 1086 of the Donald J. Trump presidency. I have a great show lined up for you today. Coming up momentarily, Keith Hansen with a very special guest. I just can't wait for this. Before I get to, before Keith comes on here, I want to just make sure everyone knows this. Yesterday, about 24 hours ago, MSM.com, I believe it was also with the Washington Post, issued a statement, a report, a news report, stating that John Huber has completed his review of the Clinton Foundation, Uranium One included, and, found nothing worth pursuing. Now, I would caution everyone. This is a report by MSM. This is a report by the mainstream media. This is a report that did not originate directly from the Department of Justice, as it should. So I would caution everyone to wait on this. However, I find it very interesting and telling that this came out at the time it did. Again, we're talking by Thursday, January 9th, where the report says the Justice Department inquiry launched more than 2 years ago to mollify conservatives clamoring for more investigations of Hillary Clinton has effectively ended with no tangible results. And current and former law enforcement officials said they never expected the effort to produce much of anything. I find, again, it's a biased report by the legacy media, by the old school media, by the irrelevant media. Now, it does go on. The report does go on. And look, it says John Huber, the U.S. attorney in Utah, was tapped in November 2017 by then-Attorney General Jeff Trust the Plan Sessions. I guess it doesn't say that, but you get the idea. To look into concerns raised by President Trump and his allies in Congress that the FBI had not fully pursued cases of possible corruption in the Clinton Foundation and during the Clinton's time as Secretary of State. All right. Well, we know from Tom Fitton's organization, the Judicial Watch, from even open source reporting and documentation, Charles Wortel, I'll tell you what, talk about a really knowledgeable source on the Clinton Foundation. We know, of course, the shenanigans that has gone on. And we also know too, and this is coming out, that, Obama State Department, if you look at a couple of reports that are circulating now, whistleblower calls out John Kerry, says he knows for a fact that the Obama regime has sent multiple letters directly to Soleimani, you know, the guy that's taking a dirt nap right now. And the Middle East expert by the name of Michael Doran slammed former Secretary of State John Kerry in a series of tweets exposing the Obama administration's dealing with Iran. So you've got, by the way, Duran's a fellow at the Hudson Institute specializing in Middle East security issues. He tweeted earlier in response to a self-serving opinion piece by Kerry by the New York Times. I think when you look at all of this, you will see that really, this is all combined. You've got this incredibly entrenched infrastructure of criminality, one that has been nurtured, has been fed, has been kept alive for decades upon decades upon decades. Do you expect in 1,086 days, really 3 years, do you expect that swamp is a sudden U-turn, a sudden immediate cleansing of that entrenched slime? I mean, think about if you've got Oh, I don't know either. But let's say you've got a rodent infestation or a bed bug infestation or whatever it might be. Think of just a really nasty infestation that's increased over time. Well, in many cases, it takes multiple treatments. It takes some time to get rid of that, right? That's the same with these denizens of the deep state. I'm just saying. Let me know, by the way. Okay. All right. Good. Can I connect? Can we connect? All right. What do you think of live TV and radio? All right. With me is Keith Hansen and a very, very special guest. I respect Keith, but I respect the gentleman he's bringing on. And I'm going to turn the mic over to Keith at this moment because I didn't prepare for this. It's kind of surprising. It surprises me. I mean, it's a great surprise for me that we have Keith bringing this gentleman on. Keith, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, man. Just moments ago, I learned that we have a friend joining us here shortly.
We do. He's going to be coming on here right at the bottom of the hour. Robert Spencer, the founder of Jihad Watch and the fellow at the David Horowitz Freedom Center. Because, you know, one of the things we were talking about on, I believe it was Wednesday, was about why sanctions won't work with Iran. And why no matter what we try to do, we're trying to approach this from a political standpoint, from a social standpoint, but what we need to understand is the religious ideology that's driving everything that Iran is doing and why they feel that they're justified no matter what sanctions they face. You know, it's as if, you know, we as Christians, when we encounter behavior or we encounter resistance that we deem to be oppositional or that's persecutional, then, you know, we look at it and we say, well, it's just part of our faith. We're not going to allow that to sway our path. We're not going to allow that to sway our faith. We're going to continue on in the path that we believe is the path of righteousness. And you have to remember that this is the exact same approach that the fundamentalist ideological leaders of Iran are looking at what they're involved in as. That's the easiest way to understand it. So rather than, you know, just kind of going in circles about how that works, I wanted to pull Robert in. Robert, I've had a longstanding relationship with. Talk about somebody who understands the background and once again, the ideologies of fundamentalist radical Islam.
You know, I've spent some time with him as well. And if there's any go-to person, I believe, on these types of issues, it would be Robert Spencer. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah. So, anyway, he's actually traveling, and he assured me that once he got to his destination that he was going to connect with us here. So, should be around the bottom of the hour. So, I mean, we've still got about 20 minutes here. Okay. If there's other things that you really wanted to tackle. Kind of noticing that, Iran is just kind of like, it's just the whole conflict over there is just kind of, it seems like it's, oh, we're back on impeachment now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And isn't that kind of the way of the press, the media? We are back on impeachment. Iran is just kind of a footnote at the moment. So what do you attribute to that? What's going on here? There's two stories, or there's actually three stories. There's the international developments with Iran. Okay. That's story one. Story two would be the domestic, situations with respect to impeachment and the infringement of our rights by the left. And then the third story maybe is the larger of the three, would be the media focus of the former two. I mean, so are we being guided by the media? Are we being directed by the media? Where to look? Look over here. No, pay attention to this.
I think the media certainly, I believe, creates this alternate reality. We've talked about the concept of postmodernism many times. And of course, in postmodernism, your reality is your reality and it's just as valid as my reality. There is no one singular reality. That all of your education and your wisdom and your life experience and your biases and everything else like that shape your personal reality, and that is just as real as my reality, which is just as real as the person who has 27 different personalities talking to them on a daily basis. You are nobody to question somebody else's reality and vice versa.
But are we talking about facts? I mean, let's be careful of our language here. Are you talking about reality or facts? Because I believe facts are facts. There are events or things or whatever noun you want that are true. I mean, undeniable facts or true facts, whatever you, however you want to say it. Now, you look at those facts is reality.
Okay. Well, let's look at this though. Let's really, you know, we throw words around all the time.
Sure.
But do we really understand what those words mean? Well, okay. Let me ask you this. What are facts?
Well, that's a good question. Let's look up the legal definition of fact, of the noun of fact.
Now, are we using Webster or are we using Black's Law?
What's your preference?
Well, let's do both.
All right.
Because both are equally valid, but both have a place in a respective venue.
Okay.
Webster's dictionary is going to give us the everyday common usage, colloquial definitions of words that we use in common speech every day. Black's Law Dictionary is going to give us a legally acceptable standardized definition of one term and concept. Let's do both.
All right. So I'm doing here is I have Webster, Merriam-Webster.com up. I just now typed in the word fact. Let me see here. Ooh, fat. No, fact. There it is. Okay. Fact is defined as something that has actual existence. There it is on your screen. An actual occurrence. So A, something has actual existence. B, an actual occurrence. Let's go to two because it's relevant as well. Piece of information presented as having, important word here, objective reality. Objective reality, that modifier is very important there. And three, mm-hmm. the quality of being actual. So there you've got it in a nutshell. Merriam-Webster dictionary definition of fact. Go on.
Okay, so objective reality, not subjective reality. Now, could you differentiate between subjective and objective?
Could I?
Yes.
Well sure. I mean, okay. Would you? Any reasonable person could, sensible, reasonable, sane, rational person could.
Are you? Sounds like you're invoking the reasonable man standard from a legal standpoint. Okay.
Correct.
All right. Good. So we're on the same page. And if I sound a little bit sarcastic, I intend to be. But I think there's a larger point here. The difference between subjective and objective is what?
Point of view.
Okay. Point of view. Singular versus
or bias. Simply put, okay. Bias. Yeah.
Okay. So the plurality, if you will, of individuals. So if you have one person, the reasonable man standard. It's almost like the reasonable man standard versus the doctrine of objective reasonability, which is looking at it from a jury standpoint.
Correct.
Okay. So the doctrine of objective reasonability deals with multiple objective and reasonable individuals.
Stipulated. Yep. Okay.
So here, I can just see the comments coming in now. What is his point? Okay. Well, the point is this, is that with this concept of postmodernism, okay, a fact is something that is real to you. If I think about how many people would go to their deathbed maintaining a certain belief or a certain standpoint because they heard it or they saw it, or they had some experience. Let's use UFOs, for instance.
All right.
There are people out there who absolutely positively think that the concept of UFOs completely just – it's ludicrous. It's science fiction at best. All right. It's schizophrenia at worst. But then you have other people that, nope, on that day in that cornfield, I saw that cylindrical object in the field. There is no way you can possibly tell me anything to the contrary. Okay, that person is going to look at that as a fact. That is their reality based upon their particular experiences, or they're something that they've seen, something that they've heard, something that they've done, something that they've had personal experience.
Okay, do you want to go down this road? Because we're dealing with unsubstantiated occurrences of events, unwitnessed, or that don't have a witness. Would we not be better off in this example saying, well, look, it's raining outside. Somebody can go out and we'll see that everyone in that particular area can go out and see the rain. Or do you want to continue with UFOs? It's up to you.
Well, okay. Now, if let's say, for instance, excuse me. No, I do want to go down this road because let's say, for instance, that you were raised in some type of strange religious cult, that the rain falling from the sky were actually the tears of, I don't know, Manfrax. And Manfrax is this demigod who is stuck between the worlds. I mean, I'm really reaching here, okay?
Yeah.
But ever since you were born, when you went outside and experienced moisture falling from the sky, these were the tears of Manfrax. Okay?
Right.
Is that not your reality? Is that not your particular fact? How many people are going to argue with you, and how many people are going to be able to sway you more appropriately? I mean, you could have a lot of people that would argue with you. Listen, I don't care what you were raised believing. Here's the fact. This is rain. This is moisture. This is condensation. It's liquid water falling from the sky. No. These are the tears of Manfrax.
Okay.
The point being is that in the eyes of the person who firmly believes that, or in the mind of the person that firmly believes that, okay, that is the fact. The fact is that this is, until they are proven otherwise, or until they allow themselves to open their minds to the fact that perhaps they were misled, that they were misguided, that they were given bad information, false information, biased information, erroneous information. Until they're able to open their mind to that and accept the fact that perhaps they were wrong and perhaps the information that was given to them was wrong, they're going to continue believing because that's their experience their entire life.
But
see where I'm going with this?
I do. However, you're taking an actual occurrence, which is rain, and in one case looking at it or calling that rain the tears of whatever, okay, based on an individual's life experience, their reality, not the actual evidence or not the actual occurrence of rain. You're going into a description of an actual occurrence as opposed to the actual occurrence. Am I wrong?
Well, I mean, I guess we're splitting hairs over that, I guess.
True. We are.
But ultimately, the bottom line is that to that person who believes that the rain is not actually the condensation of moisture falling from the sky, that the rain are the tears of Manfrax, then that person is going to continue to believe it. To them, that is the fact. The fact is, listen, you can sit there and assert this is some type of rare meteorological occurrence, but the bottom line is these are the tears of Manfrax. This is fact to that person. And so how does this tie in with the media? Well, the media understands that if they can be the first ones to fill the vacuum inside of somebody's head, and when I say vacuum, I don't mean that in a mean way. I mean, listen, something happened. I heard that there was a bombing in Iran, so I'm going to scurry off to whatever news source I happen to trust because I want information. I want something to plug in the holes in that story.
All right. Okay? And that's an important point there. A news source that I happen to trust.
Correct.
Keep that in the back of your mind, folks. Go ahead.
Okay. Now, I go to that I go to that news source and I get my information. Now, they tell me what happened. They give me the facts of the case. And from there, I start to formulate my own opinion about what's going on. I formulate a mental picture in my head. Now, there's also a very interesting psychological condition called confabulation. Are you familiar with confabulation?
Oh, do tell.
Okay. So confabulation is, in essence, it's a memory error, but it's also what people do when there's information missing from a story. Is they will plug in information based upon their – so if you give a person 50% of the story, and I'll give you a perfect example. There's a Well, there's a video out there on YouTube that goes into an example of this. Okay, the lecturer opens up by saying that there was a gangland slaying that occurred in a Virginia Beach, I believe it was a Virginia Beach hotel. And when the investigators got to the crime scene, they saw that this was one of the bloodiest crime scenes that they had ever seen in their life. There were four people that were murdered inside this hotel room, and they go on to talk about the conditions of the bodies and where the bodies were. Okay, now in that story, do you remember how many people in that were shot in that hotel room?
Just now? Four, right?
Okay, right. But here's the thing. I never said the word shot. I never mentioned a firearm.
Okay. Okay. All right. Yep.
I mentioned a hotel room. I mentioned a gangland slaying. I mentioned all of these different things, but I never mentioned the mechanism of injury or the mechanism of homicide. So in your brain, you plug it in. Okay. Gangland slaying. I think of gangs. Gangs carry guns in a hotel room. Okay. Probably something seedy. Gangland and a hotel. Probably something seedy. Probably was like a drug deal gone wrong or something like that. Drug dealers carry guns. It would make sense to me that these people got shot. So when I ask you, how many people were murdered or how many people were shot? You said four. I never said shot. I never said firearm. I never mentioned the word gun. Your brain plugged that detail in to make the story more understandable and more believable to you. That's confabulation.
All right. And I think that's a good point because confabulation, if I'm right, and I'm not saying I am, is that not, wasn't that like a, umbrella term for memory problems? I mean, we're talking about psychiatry now, going back probably a decade or more. I don't know. Isn't that like an umbrella term for individuals with, especially occurring with, memory lapses, but nonetheless, go on, continue. You made a good point there too.
Okay. No, the point is that so now if you go to your media source, you go to your news source that you trust, okay, and they give you just enough information, but they're able to shape things in such a way that that leads you to believe a certain thing or to arrive at a certain outcome. I'll give you a perfect example. The teasers for my local newscast last night, Congress voting to limit Trump's war powers, details coming up, that's a great stinger. Oh, Congress finally voted to control. It was a non-binding referendum.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Yes.
It was symbolic at best. Right. All it is saying we don't approve of what you did, but we don't. Or we are not taking any steps to try to rein you in. But what did the media do? Now you've got people out there. I heard somebody say it this morning. Well, finally, Congress did something about Trump and his warmongering. Where did you hear that? Well, the news said last night that did the news tell you that it was a non-binding referendum? Oh, I don't remember hearing that term. Oh, and by the way, what does that mean, non-binding referendum? Okay, so what was the point of watching the news? You're no more enlightened right now than you were before you watched that newscast. In fact, more to the point, you're more damaged goods because you got part of the story, you got part of the information, and then your brain plugged in the rest of the holes in that story and led you to a conclusion that is, in fact, erroneous.
Filling in the gaps. That's right. Very, very good. And we cannot confuse confabulation with ignorance. I believe confabulation is more of a mechanism where ignorance is a result. But anyway,
right. Well, I mean, it makes sense. If we're dealing with something that's complex, if we're dealing with something that we may not have a lot of experience in, or we're talking about a topic that happens to involve an arena that we're not well versed in, then it would make sense that, our brain is trying to pull information from different sources and different experiences and different, lessons or educational sessions or whatever the case may be to try to help us to make sense of that.
Precisely. Okay,
but so here's the thing. When you arrive at that conclusion, does that not in your mind, because, well, this is your reality. I mean, you believe this. And especially more to the point, you're more likely to take ownership of it as fact if it's something that you've arrived at conclusively.
Okay.
Now, I'm going to let you in on a little secret here with talk radio. You know this and I know this, but I mean, I don't think a lot of your listeners really understand this as far as talk radio goes. Okay. One of the reasons why talk radio is as popular as it is because, especially with conservative talk radio, and this is something that, that Rush Limbaugh has talked about many times, not necessarily to his audience, but amongst other broadcasters, is that you're far more likely to win a person over if you give them enough information and then allow them to draw conclusions on their own, which are positive and are favoring your particular viewpoint. Because at that point, it's not you teaching this person, it's you formulating the discovery in this person. And when this person makes the discovery on their own, if they come to the conclusion on their own, if they have an epiphany that drives them towards this belief on their own, then they're more likely to take ownership of it and accept it because, oh, I figured it out myself. It wasn't something that was spoon-fed to me.
And I would assert, Keith, I'm going to tell you, that sounds an awful lot like a certain meme or conspiracy. Some call it a conspiracy that's throughout the internet involving a letter of the alphabet, for example, to me. That's what that sounds like. Hey, I figured this out. I decoded this. Now that's not to take anything away from the people who are following this for informational purposes. And I'm talking about the QAnon conspiracy or the QAnon conspiracy. Obviously, is a pejorative by people, but nonetheless, that sounds an awful lot like that. Hey. The questions were asked were just enough few morsels were given to, and I was able to figure this out. Oh man, I was able to figure it out. So that's kind of my thoughts on that. So anyway.
But is it wrong?
Oh, first of all, don't send me emails, please. I am all in favor of educating the public. I'm all in favor of people doing their own research. And if that's the intent, great job. I am not in favor of hanging my hat on something that may or may not happen without my particular intervention or action. And that's where I see, is it wrong? No. However it's used could be incorrect or wrong if it's used improperly.
Right. And I mean, and it's a double-edged sword. I mean, it's like a firearm. A firearm can be used positively. A firearm can be used negatively. Now, what I'm talking about in terms of talk radio is not, I mean, what is our job? Okay. No, first and foremost, let's understand one thing, at least for me. Okay. My job, first and foremost, is to be entertaining.
Sure.
I want to have an entertaining program. That's what I've always done. And when people have asked me, oh, you know, are you a journalist? Well, first and foremost, I'm an entertainer. You know, the 4 years that I spent with NTK and UVR up here in New England, I did a morning drive show. Okay. Now my morning drive show, first and foremost, was to be entertaining, enlightening, and thought provoking. That's what I want to do.
Oh no. Watch out. The people who accused Alex Jones of being an entertainer based on his own admission, very similar to yours, they're going to be just saying, oh, look at this. This is entertainment. Keith Hansen just said he's an entertainer. He's an actor.
Hmm. No, not an actor. Just I present enlightenment and education in a fun and entertaining way.
Yeah, absolutely. No, you're 100% accurate. All right, we're at the bottom of the hour break. I love it, man. I love it. I can't wait to hear the feedback from this. You're listening to the Hagmann Report, Keith Hansen. Oh my gosh, what a great discussion. We're gonna be right back. Stay right where you're at.
Mainstream media won't. You're listening to the Hagmann and Hagmann Report on the Global Star Radio Network.
Thank you. Exposing the New World Order, you're listening to the Hagman and Hagman Report on the Global Star Radio Network. Stand by. Doug and Joe will be back shortly.
Welcome to Hagman. It is the Hagman Report for today. With me is Keith Hansen. We just had a robust conversation during that last segment. Before we get back to Keith, look, folks, HagmanStore.com, HagmanStore.com, Hagman, two N's, HagmanStore.com, Hagman Coffee, three types of coffee, Detective's Choice, which is a highly caffeinated coffee, Revolution, and Patriot Blend, other two. So three types of coffee, three ways you can get it, ground, whole bean, or K-cup. Go to HagmanStore.com. Significant proceeds, of course, are used to fight those groups on the ground fighting human and child trafficking and child sex trafficking as well. Keith Hansen, I'll tell you what, next week is going to be a big week. Keith Hansen coming out, the Keith Hansen Show. I can't wait. I just can't wait. You heard the first segment, what he's got to offer, that and more. Coming up, joining us, hopefully, momentarily, will be Robert Spencer. Robert Spencer is a great guy. I've met him numerous times. And while we're waiting for Robert, Keith, come on back in. And he's going to be connecting with Erica, I suspect, right?
Hello?
Ah, there we go. Keith, I'm gonna turn it over to you. Robert Spencer, it's so good to have you on. Doug Hagman here. Thank you for coming on with Keith. I'm gonna kind of just back away, give Keith the microphone, and let you guys talk. But I want to say thank you, Mr. Spencer, and it's good to talk to you again.
Likewise, thank you very much.
All right.
And Robert, great to have you back on, my friend. How you doing?
Good, Keith. Thanks. How are you?
Not too bad. And now that everything is kind of settled down, so I think we had spoken with Doug's audience here about the absolute kerfuffle that was the result of you coming up here to speak, and this was a kerfuffle that was primarily because of members of the Republican Party who were trying to get you silenced. So it's just kind of interesting to see where we are today in this whole discussion about First Amendment issues and the ability to speak in a manner that threatens the bubble that so many people are living in today.
Yeah, you know, cowardice is rampant, and it's really a shame that so much of the Republican Party up where you live and nationally is cowardly and just goes along with whatever the Democrats say, and they don't really present Americans with a genuine choice. I'm hoping that the change that President Trump represents in that will continue to spread throughout the Republican Party nationwide.
The purpose of me having you on today, though, Robert, is not to talk about the Republicans, but more or less to talk about a conversation that we had on Wednesday. We're talking about the situation in Iran right now, and the conversation was had about what is the motivation of Iran. One of the things that I assert is that sanctions are not going to work against Iran because this is not a political or a financially motivated jihad or movement or war or whatever you want to call it with Iran. This is religiously motivated. And I wanted to get your take on that. And I wanted to get your perspective on what exactly the tenets of Islam are they following in their motivations in their aggressions against not only Iraq, but also Saudi Arabia as well and the rest of the world.
All right. Well, in the first place, yes, you're right. If people are thinking that sanctions are going to end the conflict and make the Iranians stop working against American interests and shouting death to America and so on, that's not going to happen. What could happen is that the sanctions will make it impossible for them to pursue their aims. The Islamic Republic of Iran has been underwriting terrorism around the world. Hezbollah, Hamas, Islamic Jihad, they all get funded by Iran, and there are plenty more as well. And that could end. As a matter of fact, it's already started to end. I was recently talking to a Lebanese gentleman whose brother is the mayor of a town there, and he told me that he was talking with his brother, and his brother told him that he'd recently met with the local Hezbollah operative, and the Hezbollah guy told him, "We haven't been paid in months." And that is the kind of way that sanctions can and are working. But nonetheless, there will always be some of the Iranians who will continue to pursue this in whatever kind of field that they can, because the jihad of the Islamic Republic is based on Islamic teachings that mandate that Muslims must wage war against and subjugate unbelievers. And those teachings are in their holy books. They're not subject to reform. They're not subject to reconsideration. They're not going to be deterred by sanctions or other difficulties. It's going to be something that's going to continue as long as there are people who believe in the book. Not everybody who believes in the book is going to wage jihad, but all those who are waging jihad are people who take the teachings of Islam regarding jihad very seriously.
As far as the structure of the nation, the Islamic Republic of Iran, tell us a little bit more about the structure and how this country is set up in accordance with the tenets of Islam.
The Islamic Republic is set up according to a principle called Vilayat Ifaqi, which is essentially the rule of the cleric. The idea is that Muhammad was a prophet. He got messages from Allah, and he was also the leader of the Muslim community. And so the Ayatollah Khomeini back in the 70s, when the Shah was still in power, argued that the Muslim clerics by right were the ones who should be ruling the country, because that would be in imitation of Muhammad. And it would be the way that he wanted the society to be set up, with the Muslim clerics as his successors ruling over the people and governing by Islamic law. And so that's what Iran is constituted as. It's an Islamic republic in the fullest sense. All its laws, except for things like traffic laws and that kind of thing, are based on Islamic teaching, and it very strictly enforces Islamic teaching. So there are morality police out on the streets. They will arrest women who don't have their heads covered, or not fully or properly covered, or aren't dressed in the right way, or aren't obeying other Islamic provisions. You can get arrested in Iran for drinking a beer. You can get arrested in Iran for all sorts of things that probably a lot of people don't know are against Islamic law.
I'm sorry, I had my microphone on mute there. Generally helps when you unmute the mic. So they believe that the clerics should rule the country. That would be the equivalent of saying, for instance, that the Pope was the leader of the United States, for instance, if we were to put it into a parallel. One of the things that you and I have talked about in the past, that I've talked about with many other people, is one of the big issues that Iran has with Saudi Arabia. There's this constant, tension between the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia and Iran. And what I have explained it as is the issue that Iran takes, being fundamentalist Islam, radical Islam, they take issue with the fact that the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, or Saudi Arabia as a nation, is being governed by a hereditary monarchy and not a succession of clerics.
Yeah, that's right. And also, of course, the fundamental difference between Iran and Saudi Arabia is that Saudi Arabia is Sunni and Iran is Shiite. Now, that too goes back to who should rule the community. The split between the Sunnis and the Shiites is one over the authority over the community and who should have it. The Shiites insist that Muhammad chose Ali, one of his followers, to succeed him, and that the rightful leaders of the Islamic community worldwide are only the descendants of Ali. And the Sunnis reject that and say that any man who is descended from the Quraysh tribe of Muhammad and is qualified can be the leader of the Muslim community. It's largely an abstract situation at this point, because neither the Sunnis or the Shiites around the world are ruled in the way that they say they ought to be. The Sunnis don't have a caliphate, and the Shiites don't have an imamate, but they do still hate each other as being heretics for not holding to what they consider to be the proper understanding of how authority should be wielded in the Islamic community.
So ultimately, what is the goal, do you believe, of Iran's aggression?
World domination. And people will say, well, that's absurd. Iran will never dominate the world. And I grant you that. That's absolutely true. But that doesn't mean that they're not going to kill a lot of people while trying and cause a lot of havoc while trying. The Islamic Republic of Iran, because it is based on Islamic principles, is dedicated to the proposition that there is no legitimate government on earth except those that are constituted obeying Islamic law. And ultimately, all of them should be under the hegemony of the Shiite Imam. That is the 12th Imam, who's now hidden and is going to come back at the end of the world. And so the idea that this could stop at any point, that there could be some negotiated settlement, that there could be some agreement, that there would be peaceful coexistence established, it's based on a naive misunderstanding of what Islam teaches. Neither Sunni nor Shiite Islam teach peaceful coexistence as equals with unbelievers on an indefinite basis. It may be accepted for a time, and certainly there are many Muslims who don't pay attention to the doctrines that I'm talking about and don't have any problem living with unbelievers. But Islamic teaching in this regard is all about having Islam dominate the world and impose the teachings of Islamic law everywhere it can.
So would you agree that if I put bacon into my oven trying to make chocolate chip cookies, I would be wasting my time?
Well, they wouldn't be very good cookies.
They wouldn't be very good cookies.
Find some offbeat new boutique cookie. Who knows?
I guess what I'm trying to say is, but yet, despite that, okay, I'm going to keep putting bacon in my oven every single day, hoping that I'm going to get chocolate chip cookies out of that. I'm wasting my time. It's a futile effort. It's never going to happen. So what is it about lawmakers and those who are just infesting Washington, D.C., that they think that they can take a diplomatic or a common sense approach to something that is purely religiously, ideologically driven?
Well, I think that they are in the first place ignorant, often willfully ignorant. They do not want to accept that this is ideologically driven because it's inconvenient for the assumptions that you're discussing here. They want to be able to pretend that things are not as bad as they are and that they can be handled in the ordinary way that problems have been handled throughout history, and especially in the West, that we sit down together and compromise and come to a mutual understanding and so on. Now, this is a manifestation of a certain kind of denial. And of course, the denial has been abetted by people who tell these politicians that if they deal realistically with the threat of Islamic Jihad, then they are racists and bigots and they're endangering innocent Muslims. And this is the way that they get a lot of politicians to be completely cowed and on their side. They tell them that if you don't go along with what we are saying, if you don't say that Islam is peace and so on, even though however counterfactual it may be, then we're going to accuse you of being a racist and the poor Muslim family in the neighborhood is going to feel endangered by your presence. And so that kind of thing is going to make the usual politician fall right into line and say, yes, sir, because, of course, they don't want to have their political career destroyed by those kind of allegations.
So what is an effective way of actually dealing with the threat that's posed by Iran to American interests, to Western interests, to Iraq, to Israel, to a multitude of other nations and other interests? How does one deal with that?
Well, the main way that we deal with Iran is the way the president's doing, because what you're dealing with Iran is a government that understands only strength and weakness, nothing else. And so when Barack Obama is nice to the Iranians and gives them billions of dollars and makes it clear that it is only a matter of time before they get even more, and that there's not really any serious objection to their nuclear program as long as they wait a few years and comply with a few conditions. This kind of thing only encourages more terrorist support from the Iranians, more worldwide adventurism and aiding of jihad terror groups. And Trump, by contrast, shows strength when he says, we're not going to tolerate your terrorist adventurism, and we're going to make sure that you stop it. And if you don't stop it, then there will be severe consequences. That has a chance to really make a difference. And that is something that the Iranian leadership really understands, because they respect strength, but they do not respect weakness.
Now, as far as the nuclear initiatives, the nuclear desires of Iran, I had a neighbor who stopped by yesterday. We were talking about this, and he had asked. He said, think about this. He said, it's pretty difficult to try to convince any rationally thinking individual that a country that is so awash in petroleum, so awash in energy resources, would have any desire to have nuclear power for peaceful or for energy purposes. It has to be solely offensively militarized or militaristic in nature. And I would tend to agree with that. Is there anything that you could think of that would make Iran want a nuclear weapon for anything other than the ability to hold that over their neighboring countries' heads or other countries' heads and say, listen, submit to us or we will literally end you?
No, that's all it's about. It's very clear from their genocidal rhetoric regarding Israel and regarding America as well, for that matter. But here again, we have many people in the West are completely in denial, and leftists generally tend to pride themselves on being multicultural and not ethnocentric. And they claim that conservatives are just those things, and xenophobic and racist and hateful and so on. But actually, it's they who are much more ethnocentric than anybody on the right, because they assume that the Iranian leadership is just like they are. They're so self-centered and so sold out to their own point of view, excuse me, that they think that everybody else in the world thinks exactly like they do. So they want peace. They figure everybody else wants peace as well, and that the Iranians, deep down behind all their genocidal rhetoric, must really want peace. And all we need to do is find the right formula and everything will be okay. They do not seem to have any ability to understand that the Iranian leadership is working on vastly different assumptions from their own, with vastly different priorities and different perspectives. There's never been any sign that leftists have any idea of those differences in perspective and priority.
What I find amazing is the number of leftists that will defend radical Islam seemingly to their own dying breath. Despite the fact that these people take up all of these social justice warrior causes like women's rights, which certainly radical Islam, not exactly known for the way that they graciously treat women. The woke left is always advocating for the LGBTQIAXYZ community, but yet radical Islam, not exactly known for their human rights and the rights and comforts that they afford people of alternate sexual lifestyles in those countries. Genital mutilation, another one. These things that, I mean, you would see these social justice warriors should absolutely be getting, their knickers in a wad over, but yet absolutely never do, because somehow, some way, if you speak out against one particular practice of radical Islam, it is seen as a sweeping and whole indictment of the religion as a whole in the eyes of their peers.
Yes, that's right. And it shows, it's revelatory too, Keith, because it shows that the left hates America before everything else. And so even though they say they're for women's rights and they say they're for gay rights and they say they're for all these rights, then they ally with Islamic groups that have no respect for those rights. And they don't have any problem with it, because their real connection with those Islamic groups is about hating America. And we have seen recently with the reaction of the Democratic Party leadership to the taking out of Qasem Soleimani by Donald Trump, Soleimani being an international jihad terror leader who oversaw the activities of Hezbollah and other jihad terror groups And the left is trying to make him out to be some sort of a new Gandhi figure because they hate Trump so much. And I think that's emblematic of the whole problem with the left today, that these people actually are so consumed with hatred for traditional values, for the United States of America, for Donald Trump, that they are willing to ally with people who contravene their stated foremost principles and are also those of the United States itself.
If you're just joining us, Robert Spencer, the director of Jihad Watch and a Shulman Fellow at the David Horowitz Freedom Center, the author of 19 books, including the New York Times bestsellers, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Islam and the Crusades, and The Truth About Muhammad. And of course, you can pick those books up on Amazon. Also, check out his website, jihadwatch.org. I'm Keith Hansen, and I don't know, did Doug fall asleep?
No. Actually, I'm enjoying the conversation. I would like to add as well his newest work out, just out about a month now, The Palestinian Delusion, The Catastrophic History of the Middle East Peace Process. I was notified when that came out, and I got to tell you, what an important work that is by Robert Spencer, available on Amazon, jihadwatch.org. Go ahead, Keith. We got about 7 minutes left.
Well, I don't want to monopolize this, Doug. I'm sure you've got questions. Anything that you wanted to jump in with, please.
You know what? I just want to express my admiration for Robert Spencer. I don't want to get in the way of this interview. You're doing fine. But again, many, many props, for Mr. Spencer for your latest work, The Palestinian Delusion. That has a lot of good background information that people need to understand why the peace settlement, negotiated settlements, are not gonna work. I mean, they can't work. They're designed for failure. So thank you for writing that.
Thank you. Appreciate that very much.
Yeah. And if you want to say anything about that, I don't know how you, I do know. I mean, you're an intelligent guy, but I'll tell you what, it's, putting all that information together was really a fascinating read. And I think this should be in every high school, in my view, in the country.
Well, I appreciate that. This is one of the books that I've wanted to write for years. I'm trying to get those done now, one after the other. This one, so I had a lot of the material already and was able to put it together from that. I wanted to make it so that it was a resource that everybody would be able to find every last objection that the Palestinians and their supporters raise to the state of Israel would be answered. And so this is meant to be that kind of a comprehensive guide. It shows why all the peace processes failed, what happened in the peace processes, why they all failed, why the fundamental assumptions that led to them are all wrong and what we need to do instead.
Exactly. And I'll tell you, I learned more from this book than I think four or five other books about the same topic. So I appreciate that. My only question to you at this point in closing here is, where do you see Donald Trump as president? Where do you see this Iranian situation going? I mean, how's this going to end? If you had a crystal ball.
I know anything can happen. And so I say this very tentatively, but I do not think that the Iranians are going to want to escalate this further because they understand that they can't keep up. They won't be able to keep pace if it's an escalation game, and that could lead to the end of the Islamic Republic. So I rather suspect that the situation is going to die down now to some degree. They'll keep up with their rhetoric, their bellicose rhetoric and their adventurism as much as they think they can get away with. But direct provocations of the United States, like the siege of the embassy in Baghdad, I don't see those happening right now.
Okay. All right. So you don't see any imminent threat, or I don't want to put words. Let me rephrase that. Do you see any imminent threat here in the United States based on the righteous killing of Soleimani? I mean, in terms of, I don't know, proxy groups like Hezbollah becoming active here in the United States?
Well, yeah, that's possible, but they understand that if they do that now, and there certainly are Hezbollah sleeper cells in the United States that's been established. I wrote about them in my book Stealth Jihad in the year 2008, and it's not as if they've all gone away since then. Fact is, however, that they understand what the stakes are now, what the price would be now if they activate those cells at this point. And so I don't think that's going to happen right now. Maybe it'll happen later, but they also understand that if they bide their time, they're likely to get a president who's a little bit more compliant like Obama was, and then they can take advantage of his presence.
Okay, very good. Keith, I'm going to turn it back to you. Go ahead.
I would imagine that the kind of the danger zone here is going to be after the 2020 elections, and certainly if God forbid President Trump is defeated in his reelection bid, if we wind up with a Democrat president, I would imagine that they're going to see the opportunity to significantly ramp up that rhetoric and also the outward attacks as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That'll be carte blanche for them. It's going to be let the good times roll. We're going to see more trouble from Iran than ever in that eventuality.
So, this is something that it seems like it could be just ended if we were to go over there and just carpet bomb the place. I got to be honest. I've been saying that for a while. It's time that we stop dealing with this. They have been in a de facto state of war against the United States and the West since 1979. Why have we permitted this to continue on and on and on? Why haven't we, as I did with my bully, eventually just say enough is enough and knock them out, literally and figuratively?
Well, I guess obviously nobody wants another war. Trump doesn't want another war. He's rightly condemned the endless wars that we've been involved in since 9/11. That much is true. But at the same time, when I wrote the book, The Complete Infidel's Guide to Iran in 2016, I said that the Iranians want war with the United States so much that it's likely eventually that there will be that war or the Islamic Republic will fall. But I don't see a third alternative. One of those two things is going to happen sooner or later.
And they actually believe that they could defeat the United States of America?
Not necessarily. They might be engaging in more of the bizarre Shiite Muslim theology, which holds to the idea that the 12th Imam, their savior figure, is going to come back at a time when the Muslims are more persecuted than ever. And so the Muslims being persecuted will bring forward the 12th Imam. They might want to trigger that persecution by nuking Israel, for example, and then Israel nukes them back, and that's the persecution of the Muslims, millions of Muslims dying. There have been Iranian leaders who've said that they could handle that, that that would be something that they could sustain. And so the worst case scenario is that the Iranian regime pushes for a war with the United States, even though they know that they'll lose.
Wow. Gonna have to leave it right there. Keith and Robert Spencer, Keith Hansen, Robert Spencer. Robert, thank you so very much for coming on with Keith. Keith, thank you so much for having Robert Spencer. Folks, thank you so much for listening. And don't forget, folks, to visit jihadwatch.org. Also, Robert's latest book, The Palestinian Delusion. Keith, thank you. Robert, thank you. We'll be talking to you both soon.
Thank you.
God bless. Thank you.
You're listening to the Hagman Report right here on the Global Star Radio Network, up against the network break.
Mainstream media won't. You're listening to the Hagman and Hagman Report on the Global Star Radio Network.
Welcome to Hagman. I'm reaching for all the switches. I hope you saw that. Did you see that on the screen? Reaching for all the switches that's below and next to me. Folks, welcome to Hagman. It's the Hagman Report, where truth can't be silenced. Our coffee's out. HagmanStore.com. HagmanStore.com. Folks, make sure you get yourself a pack of coffee, whether it's a pound of ground beans or K-cups. We've launched the coffee by way of HagmanStore.com. That's HagmanStore.com. Give it a try. It's gourmet coffee, and the proceeds, significant proceeds from your purchase, go to support groups that are on the ground, boots on the ground, not somebody on the couch, actively engaged in investigating and combating, along with law enforcement and other, law enforcement in general, various state, local, municipal, as well as federal agencies to combat child and human sex trafficking. That's HagmanStore.com. Click on coffee. And by the way, when you're there, make sure that you don't accidentally sign up. If you want to subscribe for a month, go ahead and or for, you know, routine deliveries or timed deliveries, do that. But you've got the option of one-time purchase, or, you know, if you like the coffee, you try it, you like it, you can get it every week, every 2 weeks, or whatever your consumption level might be. HagmanStore.com. That's HagmanStore.com. Click on coffee there, and thank you so very much. All right. The first two segments I thought were just absolutely incredible today. Keith Hansen, of course, we were talking about the first segment, we were talking about reality. And, real reality, right? Real reality. Not biased reality, real reality. And then the second segment, Robert Spencer, jihadwatch.org, and of course, the author of 19 books, including his latest, The Palestinian Deception. So very, very interesting. And before Keith came on, I want to make sure that everyone had heard me correctly, when I was talking about this. Folks, look, there was a report in the MSM.com, in the Washington Post as well, about the initial reports from John Huber. All right. I don't know how many people saw this, but it's important to point this out. Where is it now? I just had it up here. The Washington, the media came out here. It is right here. Let me see. With a report stating that after 2 years of investigation into Hillary Clinton, the Clinton Foundation, and other concerns, the Huber investigation has come up with nothing. All right. That's from the mainstream media, the Washington sources. You've got to look at this with a grain of salt, I suppose. You've got to look at this through the lens of a warped mainstream media. I would wait until the Department of Justice comes out with an official statement. But if this is anything, if we are to believe anything about this, well then, oh boy, are we in trouble. This would be certainly a major setback for those who are looking for justice. And again, this is coming from, let me bring this actual piece up here. This is coming from MSN.com. This is dated yesterday. The title is Justice Department Winds Down Clinton-Related Inquiry Once Championed by Trump. It found nothing of consequence. So when you look at this, that's right, go ahead, and this is from the Washington Post as posted on MSN.com. But look at this, put it, you know, just keep it filed in the back of your mind. Is this part of a directional, how could I put this? Would this be a tactic of them attempting to get ahead of something that's coming out? Or is this something that portends something else? I don't know. Keep your eyes on this story. Again, this is not from, this release is not from the Department of Justice, but from the Washington Post. Keep your eyes on this. I guarantee you this is going to be, we're going to be talking about this next week. I can guarantee you. So that's, I'll put the link in the program description box at HagmanReportLive.com. All right. With that, I want to welcome today Austin Brower, the Ted and Austin Brower Show, right here in Global Star Radio Network. If you go to healthmasters.com, there it is on the screen, healthmasters.com. And by the way, their products, their health products are second to none. Their nutritional supplements are second to none. I take the ultimate multiple vitamin. And there's a difference, folks, in supplements. I'm going to tell you, there's a big difference in what you take. If you're thinking you can go to Walmart and pick up a $5 bottle of whatever, okay? And if you think that's going to have the same results as a high-quality healthmasters.com product, you're wrong. Go to healthmasters.com and get, at the very least, get your ultimate multiple from healthmasters.com. Get your one vitamin a day from healthmasters.com at the very least. But I think once you experience the health benefits of that, you're going to be back for more and more and more. Healthmasters.com. By the way, HR5, I believe, might be the coupon code. We'll check with Austin. Austin, how you doing?
Doug, I'm doing blessed. Great to be on the show again with you.
It's great to have you, man. It is great to have you. So HR5 or no?
Yeah, it's active. I just activated it a few minutes ago. It's hot and ready on the website. HR5, 5% off all regular price products on the website at healthmasters.com.
Good. All right. Sounds wonderful. Well, how you been, my brother? It's been a while. How were your holidays?
Oh, they're fantastic. Christmas, New Year's was great. It was a blast spending them with the kids. And, you know, New Year's, we actually had fun with the two kids. We ended up playing some board games and ended up, you know, shooting a couple rounds off in the ground in the backyard for New Year's. Didn't have any fireworks, and people were blowing off fireworks all over the place. And Hunter, my son, is like, Dad, we're going to shoot off fireworks? I was like, I didn't buy any Chinese fireworks, but I do have Lake City 556 fireworks. We can make something work with that. So it was a good time. We definitely had a blast. How was yours?
It was fine, actually. It didn't fire off any rounds, either celebratory or in anger, which is always a good thing. But yeah. Nonetheless, it was fine. I appreciate you asking. So what's on your mind today?
Well, the first thing, you know, I've been really trying to follow what's been going on in Virginia this week since now the legislation's open. They're starting to work on a lot of this stuff. And I've been talking to a lot of friends that I have up in Virginia. My wife's family, her whole mom's side of her family, lives in Virginia. So there's been a lot of things that have been starting to build up there. And the one that just came out recently, and it's on a lot of the mainstream media, so they're kind of talking about the ban on gun ranges if they have more than 50 people, and which is directly aimed at the NRA gun range. But they're saying if you have less than 50 employees, you can still keep your indoor shooting range. But there's some things about this that kind of caught my eye that's troubling to me, and why I've been encouraging everybody up in Virginia, regardless if you're a gun lover, you like to go to the shooting range a lot, any of that, you really need to be concerned and be voicing your opinion in the best possible, as much as possible right now, so they don't put this stuff into law, because this is going to set a really crazy precedent. The biggest thing about this bill and just all these bills, I mean, they have a laundry list of gun bills they're trying to do. But one thing that they said, they will allow gun ranges with less than 50 employees to still stay operational. I like how they say that. Will allow you to stay operational if, and I quote, the indoor shooting range maintains a log of each user's name, phone number, address, and the indoor shooting range verifies each user's identity and address by requiring all users to present a government-issued photo ID card. Well, you know, at first glance, you're kind of like, oh, that's not that big of a deal, but you have to think about it now. This means they're literally going to have, at any gun range in the entire state, have a full logbook of every single person, their name, their address, the date, every time they've gone to the range, which is quite troubling. And then you go on to see here that they've added in a clause of the outdoor shooting range, which they're now banning any outdoor shooting ranges if they are within 500 yards of any property zoned for any residential use. That's really troubling to me because the verbiage on that, when you actually look at the context of it, it's not saying an outdoor range shooting at a dwelling or an occupied dwelling. I understand that. It's saying any property that's zoned for any residential use, meaning unless you have, you know, 10, 20, 30 acres in a cow field out in the middle of agricultural world, you can't have an outdoor range now. If you have any property that butts up to any property that could be used for residential use, even in the future, they basically are not allowing them to have a range. And then on top of that, when they add, if you saw, they revised this gun bill. Now they're basically stating that you can keep your assault weapon and it's going to be a $50 fee. You have to register it. All your personal info and firearm detail has to be basically given in. However, there's full ban on all parts, meaning you can't have spare parts. You can't have trigger groups. You can't have vertical grips. You can't have an extra bolt for your AR-15. All of that is going to be illegal, all banned, all of it. And pistols with threaded barrels are banned, so you have to give in your threaded barrel. And they're wanting to ban silencers on top of that. And this is I really hope everybody stands their ground with this in Virginia, because this is going to set a really, really dangerous precedent on top of everything else they're trying to do with the red flag gun laws and the just everything with it. So the fact that they're trying to come in now and slide all this stuff in under the radar.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And say, well, we'll compromise with you. We'll let you keep your assault weapons, but we're banning all parts that you could possibly update it or fix it with in the future, which is an all-out ban on it. Not to mention, you have to pay them $50 to keep your gun that you already legally own. That part in and of itself just almost makes me giggle in irony, when you're having to give them money to register your gun so they let you keep your gun. Virginia's got themselves one heck of a fight coming if this stuff goes in the law.
Yeah, exactly. I know that there are three primary laws. I think SB 16, HB 64, and I'm not sure. I don't have my notes here with me, but I know that there's three laws. And the one you referenced earlier was about the assembly and then, of course, the gun ranges. But to me, the most troubling aspect of this would be the perception that Northam and the legislature is kind of walking this back, and the perception that this is a yep. win. This is not a win. This is not a win for the pro Second Amendment crowd. Do not fall for this. This is nothing close to a win. This is pre-confiscation. I'll just leave it at that.
Yep.
That's what this is. I would just caution everyone, about this, and do not allow this to go unanswered. And you know, Matt Bracken, who is very well known on the internet, had cautioned people about going to the January 20th gun lobby day and show, you know, pro Second Amendment in Richmond rally. He's cautioned people about going, but look, you know, I think that the risks outweigh the precautions. I get it. Because if we don't stand up and do something right now, what's the alternative? It's going to be waiting until we have the appeals, the ability to appeal the laws through the courts. And you're talking about a number of years. You're not talking about days or minutes on something that should never even be entertained from the beginning. And that's, you know, look, we've got to stand up. This has got to be, in my view, this has got to be that line that no one ever crosses. And even more, no one ever thinks about crossing ever again. That's my view.
That's well said, Doug. And that's kind of what you have to look at this. And I urge a lot of people, as you just said, understand what we're looking at, because you have to have a line in the sand with this. What they've done is, and they do this all the time, and we got hit with this down here in Florida back in March 2018. They come in with all these unbelievably outrageous laws, like we're going to ban all guns, we're going to ban all assault rifles, everything's going to get banned. And then everybody pitches a fit, and then they come back and say, okay, we'll compromise. We're not going to, you can keep them, we're not going to confiscate them. but you just have to register them with us and you have to pay $50 fee to keep them and you can never sell them. And basically when you die, they have to be turned in and incinerated. And everybody goes, oh, okay, I'm good with that. I'm okay with that now. That's a fair compromise. That's not a fair compromise. That shouldn't even be a discussion. You know, and then we got that with the red flag gun law down here in Florida is what I was referring to in 18, where they came in and they said, hey, you know, we're going to basically they tricked us. They straight lied to us. They said, hey, we're bringing a bill in. We're going to allow teachers to be armed. We're going to allow teachers basically to have the training to be able to carry firearms, to be able to defend our children in school. And then after they passed it, we found out real quick that it made it a felony to own a bump fire stock. It basically turned around and gave us the red flag gun laws, which we never had before in Florida. And then in turn, we never even got armed teachers. It was a complete and total ruse. What they did is they put the clauses in the bill that allowed the counties and cities to decide what they wanted to do with it. And of course, every single city and county, pretty much the entire state of Florida, decided to go with the cheapest option, which was to hire basically a security guard per every 2,000 students. It's all we got. It was nothing. It was a complete and total lie. And this is what they're about to get up here in Virginia. Not to mention this whole thing with the gun range. It, to me, when you start adding these together, you see the basically prohibiting outdoor gun ranges, restricting indoor gun ranges, the whole context of what they have introduced, which I don't think it'll get passed, basically banning militias and banning training one together. And now we're going in and we're saying, hey, we're going to ban assault weapons, but you can keep them. You just have to pay us money to keep your property. I have a real problem with that. And it's kind of like that movie 300 where Leonidas is talking in the beginning. And he goes, it was just an act of submission. He goes, submission. I got a real problem with that. And that's kind of with this. This isn't a compromise. This is submission. You're giving in and you're submitting to a tyrannical authority in governor in Virginia now by saying, hey, I want to keep my guns, but here's my money. I mean, you got to think about it. For an average people down here in Florida, you know, that I own 5, 10, 15, 20 AR-15s, you're talking about if this goes through, you're going to have to be spending thousands of dollars to keep all of your guns, thousands of dollars to register them, which I mean is beyond belief to me. And so just something, again, I don't want to take up the whole show on it, but I encourage everybody in Virginia, this is not a compromise. This is not okay. Everybody needs to be raising Cain about this right now because it's like you said, this is the easy option to resist this now. Once it goes completely sideways and they pull a Lexington and Concord on us, it gets horrible for everybody involved. And that's something that I really, really hope and pray we never have to experience again in this country because it doesn't, it's not good for anybody.
I agree. And I know that there's a website titled, Virginia Citizens Defense League. And I'll put the link there for you. They have a way where you can email the legislature about what's going on. And in fact, it's already written up. It's a very simple process. But the fact is, just because you might be in California, Oregon, or whatever state you might be in, Pennsylvania, Florida, you can take part in the fight in Virginia by making your voice heard. I would urge everyone outside of the state to band yes. with the Virginians and say, look, we're not going to take this. And because, look, the 13 other states behind Virginia right now, looking to pass or looking at Virginia as a template for future legislation. And I think that this is absolutely critical that we put these rabid, crazy people down. All right. That said, folks, Austin Browers, my guest, healthmasters.com, healthmasters.com, HR5 is the coupon code. Let me tell you something. What you need to do is you need to go to healthmasters.com and shop. They've got the highest quality nutritional supplements around. HR5 is the coupon code. Healthmasters.com, HR5, at the very least, get your ultimate multiple from them. And I guarantee you, once you finish the 30-day supply, you're going to feel so much differently, so much better. The products are top-notch. None better on the market, in my view. And they support the alternative media or the people in this media. So healthmasters.com, healthmasters.com. All right, sir. You take us wherever you want to go, whatever.
Well, yeah. And that being said, I mean, and this is why I always encourage everybody, you know, do the best you can right now to stay in shape, you know, yeah. Get exercise, get out and walk at the very least. If you can, get on the weights, you know, do something, staying active, getting your diet cleaned up because as Doug just said, we all got to be helping and supporting Virginia right now, because it's like, oh, well, it's not a big deal. It only happened there. It doesn't affect me. I'm an unfree state, blah, blah, blah. The problem is that's not going to be the case. This is going to spread like a cancer if this goes down in Virginia. And we all have to be physically prepared, have good cognitive functioning, energy. Everything needs to be top-notch right now, and that's the best way to do it, is with supplementation and a clean diet and with exercise. That being said as well, this is something, and I, you know, you and I, Doug, have talked about this repeatedly on staying away from Google, staying away and being very careful, obviously, what you do on the internet now, and also, too, using different search engines that don't involve Google because they track everything you do. This is very troubling to me. As part of the special prosecutor's investigation into the fake attack on the disgraced actor Jesse Smollett, a Cook County judge now has ordered Google to turn over a year's worth of Smollett's emails, photos, locations, data, and private messages. Investigators have been working on this case for over 4 months, and they've finally been granted access to the information following two warrants that were approved by the circuit court. Now, I can't. I don't have any sympathy for Smollett. I mean, we pretty much all know what he did. He got busted. He got his hand caught in the cookie jar trying to start another race war. And then you went ahead and you had Judge Michael Tooman completely dismiss the whole case, drop it. I mean, just it was so shady. So, of course, they got U.S. Attorney Dan Webb to basically start doing a full-blown investigation into him. That's good. Now, what I do have a problem with now is what we're seeing here is the precedent of Google being forced to hand over all this information now, which in this situation, it's probably a good thing because it's going to get them busted. However, how often is this going to start happening, and how easy is this going to start occurring where you can have at any point in time Google, which pretty much, by the way, monitors everything you do via our little phones as well. They're your location, your data, your messages, your emails, your search engine, your search history, all that stuff, and just be turned over anytime they want. Can they come in now and use that as an excuse to red flag somebody because they say, hey, this guy may be a danger. We've gotten a warrant now for his Google activity. We see these guns websites he goes to. We see these ammo sites he goes to. This is basically enough for us to go in and get a red flag order to go seize his firearms. I don't know. I'm just speculating. But, you know, you've been in as far as in the, you know, law enforcement area a lot as far as Doug. What do you think about this as far as this being this easy now to get Google to hand over basically all of your private internet data in something like this kind of investigation?
It's selective. And thanks for asking me about that, because it's selective prosecution. In terms of any legitimate prosecution, it'll be selective. In terms of, well, there's a number of alarming things about this, a number of ways we could take this, but consider the fact that they would have this information, number one. What are they doing with that information? Okay, so now remember, this is before the internet. This is back in the 80s. I remember needing some information from, I guess it's all right to say, you know, from a credit data company. And the credit, it was more than credit data. It was bank balances. It was bank account numbers. It was, I mean, you name it, they had information on individuals. So in order to get that information, it was not legal to get that information except in certain circumstances. Now, again, we're talking in the late 1980s, before all of the open source, you know, computer stuff, Google searches and stuff. But anyway, I remember needing information and be able to get it by handing a bottle of, Crown Royal to someone, you know, or maybe, hey, here's some tickets to a local sporting event. It was that easy. Now, the misuse potential there, and arguably maybe, you know, obviously I could have misused that information. Maybe, think about it. Think about, maybe a businessman who's got a credit card that's keeping a woman in a penthouse, for example. You know that now, right? Okay. So, what could you do that? What could an unscrupulous person do with that information? Oh my goodness. and apply that today, if you know what I'm saying. So, but even more basic than that, the fact that there is the ability Google Alphabet to actually have that information assembled and ready to turn over. Oh, yeah, not good at all. So the abuse potential, the fact that it exists, and the fact that we are being monitored and by ways, folks, you don't even know. I mean, you've got no clue. Voice recognition, facial recognition. You go on Facebook, the Periscope, the voice and facial recognition, the cadence in your voice. I'll just leave it at that. I mean, Austin, this is far beyond 1984. And I do believe that we are going to see a time when that's going to be used to imprison us. Although it's great now, you're able to get a lot of information. Oh, the internet is wonderful. Not so good, you know, when it comes our turn in the crosshairs, in my view.
Well, and that's why I wanted your take on it, because I know you've been involved in a lot of that as far as in your investigations, you know, as far as work. And so, I was troubled when I saw it as well. And it's, like you said, the fact that information's even stored is troubling. That information, I mean, your search histories, your locations, why is that information over a year ago even available? I mean, I realized real quick how effective the facial recognition cameras are when I was at Disney Springs. You know, I told you this for a month and a half ago, and how quickly they ID'd me just walking around with my family. Like I said, you got to understand, like I'm walking around, I got stroller, I got my two kids, I got my beautiful wife, we're hanging out, we're talking. I didn't walk in sunglasses on, hat pulled down, backpack on, sulking around the corners, acting like I was doing. If I would have been doing that, I'd been like, okay, you know, they had an obvious reason to ID me. But I wasn't, you know, I was just walking freely on my way. And that's what was so troubling to me and such an eye opener as well, is that we have that level of facial recognition software and technology in the private sector, which shows me, if it's in the private sector, what level is it on the government spying level with the NSA and Homeland Security and CIA and FBI and everything else? And we saw a glimmer of that when Snowden released all that stuff years ago. And we really kind of just, I think it woke up the American population to an extent, but I really think the American population almost needs more revelations like that to be exposed again. And that's why the CIA and all these covert organizations have done everything they can to keep Assange, to keep WikiLeaks, to keep all this stuff buried. Because, you know, the moment that the narrative changes and the American population goes, aha, they have an aha moment and realize we're being spied on everything we do, everything we say, everywhere we go, everything's being monitored. And for 99% of the time, if you don't have a nefarious purpose and you're just traveling on your way, it really probably doesn't bother you, and nor does it really have an impact on your life. But as soon as they want that information, like you said, and as soon as they have a reason to get that information and they want to start looking at you for a specific reason, you realize real quick how much they can pull up on you. And it's it's about to explode even further with this 6G technology that's about to be rolled out. You know, 5G, I've been yelling and screaming about 5G for years now, not just to mention because of the health dangers that 5G imposes and the fact that the FCC unilaterally ruled that no county or city municipality can block 5G from coming into their areas, even though there's been no long-term true research done on the health aspects of human beings when they get exposed to this 5G radiation, and they're having towers and microwave, you know, 5G antennas all around your house, all in every city. I mean, I was in Orlando the other day with Lana. We had to go up there to meet the guy who's doing the cabinets for our home that we're building down here in Florida, which hopefully I will be in this year. I've been working on it for 8 months now. So,
I would not have the patience to do that, brother. I just wouldn't. My hat's off to you.
I'm one and done. I'm one and done with this one. Yep. This will be my my first custom home I've ever built, my first home I've ever built, and it will be my last home I've ever built, pretty much. So, but that being said, when we were up there, there was multiple spots in these residential areas with these big 5G towers. It's already up in Orlando. And I was pointing out to Lana, I see all the 5G? She goes, yeah, I mean, big, ugly, beefy towers. I mean, this monster of a thing. And what nobody's discussing, and that's why I've brought it up repeatedly now, is that 5G, the reason why they're spending trillions of dollars on 5G, isn't just because it's going to get us a half a second faster download speed or streaming speed. That's what they've sold it to us as. That's been the face value, but that's all a subsection of it, because 5G infrastructure is being laid down to add the 6G infrastructure on once they get it operational in the next couple of years. And I wanted to bring this up on your show as well, because this is just so ominous to me that the Center for Converged Telehertz Communication and Sensing, COMCT, has already been working on initial 6G specifications. This article's from the IoT Times. And they said the multi-university research effort is turning their attention to 6G. While most people are hearing about 5G now, 6G is already underway. Apart from providing precision location to a fraction of an inch. Listen to that, Doug. Precision location to the fraction of an inch, a millimeter.
Yep.
Supplementing GPS, 6G imaging techniques will identify any person or moving object in the world. This intelligent, immersive infrastructure will support low latency virtual reality, augmented reality, and seamless telepresence. The technologists of the Finland University of Oulu have announced funding of the rollout of 6Genesis, the 6G 8-year research program to conceptualize 6G. 10 years before seeing the first application of 6G approved of what they're saying, it will be rolled out by 2030. And they're saying it's going to support the future of all autonomous vehicles, the Internet of Things, platooning, which I'm not even sure what that is. I have to look that one up, and intelligent roads. Part of how that will work is through wideband inter-car links, which communicate data and measure vehicle locations to a millimeter. These links also anticipate and manage any movement and proximity and avoid collisions. This whole thing is so creepy to me. And the fact that they're calling it 6Genesis is the program, as in Genesis chapter 6, as in every thought of every man was evil all of the time. This is beyond creepy to me, Doug. And I just want to kind of bring it up again on your show, because I talked about it on our show the other day. And this is what 5G is all about. This is why I have been encouraging everybody, especially locally and on your show and on our show, do your best to try to get your local legislators, especially this is going to come down to a city and county area, to prevent 5G from coming in as long as possible. Not only of the health aspects of it, but you know, once they roll this program out, it has to be full U.S. nationwide. They have to have 5G everywhere before they can get 6G, because the 6G is going to work like a smart grid. It's going to connect and link the entire country into a smart grid. And so the roadways, the vehicles, the phones, I mean, but specific, I mean, they're saying that they're going to have precision location to a millimeter, Doug.
Sure.
This is some creepy stuff that they're rolling out with, and nobody is talking about what's about to happen when we have the information we just talked about, that Google has all of this, and they're going to put Google on a full-blown steroid cycle when they get this type of technology to monitor, watch, and literally look at everything everybody does all of the time, including in your house, in your car, in your yard, on your property, everything. Because remember, the 6G, once it hooks up to your cell phone, you're going to have a little mini 6G tracker with you everywhere you go. And this, it's going to ping these towers, not to mention the massive amount of radiation exposure we're going to have. It's going to be a security nightmare when it comes to privacy.
You know, have you thought about 6G being the actual chip, if you will? What's referred to as a chip? I cannot see any other way, and I go back to an article or articles, research, open source stuff that occurred, I saw on the internet back in March of last year. I'm just trying to make sure it was around March, April, sometime in the spring, where There was a meeting in Finland of some scientists, and they were rolling out the plans for 6G. And the only way to really accomplish what I think 6G wants to accomplish, or the next step beyond that, would be that implanted chip of some kind.
Yep.
Being sold as, well, you know, we need to do this after all. Because the doors that 5G opens, in my view, the potential for hacking the Internet of Things, shall we say, would warrant and perhaps be at least sold to the public as, well, we'll fix it through, we'll make this, we'll make an implant or chip of some kind that is just absolutely, it can't be hacked. It's just yours and yours alone to reassure the public. So this is what I see coming out. I don't see much beyond where we're at now with this 5G network, this grid system, being able to go much further in iterations than a chip, in my view. And I could be wrong, but look, that's what I see.
I think you're spot on, Doug. Because it doesn't, like you said, nothing else makes any sense. You already got Elon Musk over here developing the Neuralink that they're starting human trials on this year, 2020, which is basically a neurochip, like fibers they're going to put in your brain so you can interact with your phone and stuff and use your brain. I mean, it's really, really, really sci-fi stuff that we only thought was in movies. It's about to become reality. And the next aspect of this is too, though, with the smart roads and the autonomous vehicles, the only way to have a fully functioning autonomous roadway. And this is what a lot of people understand, because so many yes. people are always pro-autonomous cars. Oh, pro, it'd be so nice. I got it. It would be cool to jump in your truck, say where you want to go, you recline, you pull out a movie, you pull out a magazine, you pull out a book, and you read, and you're there in an hour, and you don't have to do anything. That's super cool. I love that idea. Is that something that we really want to give up, though, our freedoms and privacy to endure and enjoy? Here's the problem with this, and this is what people have already told me with the autonomous systems. We have a good customer of ours that has been in the tech field for years, and he actually brought us to a convention a couple of years ago in Orlando to discuss the dangers of 5G. This is when I first started getting introduced to it, back in like 2016, 2017. And he said, here's the problem that everybody understands. Once everything rolls out with this autonomous roadway and these autonomous vehicles and these smart roads is what they're going to call them, you're not going to be able to operate your vehicle. People don't get that. You're not going to be able to say, you know what? I don't want to deal with a smart Prius. I don't want to deal with a smart Tesla. I still want to drive my F-250. I want to drive freely, unmolested, on my way to anywhere I want. Here's the problem. The whole 6G system that's going to work with the autonomous vehicles and the smart roads isn't going to be able to anticipate exactly what you're about to do. That's how it works with autonomous vehicles. They all talk to one another. So this car's passing this car, this car's passing this car. They're all smart cars. They all are talking to each other through the AI. Well, if I come through and you got all these smart cars moving around and I'm in my F-250 and I'm like, you know what? This guy's driving slow in the left lane, or this car's passing it, or this car's idiotic, and I cut him off and I get in front of another car and I pull another car, they can't anticipate everything I'm about to do because I'm a human being. They can try. So that's what they told us in this thing. Once the 6G rolls out with these autonomous vehicles and smart roads, they're going to ban vehicles from human usage, which means you are never, ever going to have the ability to travel freely, unmolested on your way anymore. If you don't pay your $50 fee to keep your assault weapon in Virginia,
there you go.
They'll shut the vehicle off. They'll say, hey, it's cool. You can have your keys back. You won't have keys. And at that point, you'll go through, you know, probably a chip. They're going to give you a chip to control your own car. They're going to say, hey, man, you didn't pay your $50, you know, fee to keep your assault weapon this year. Your car's not going to be able to work. It's not going to take you to work. And you go, I'm not paying your stupid fee. I'll keep my guns freely on my way. And let's say, okay, that's fine. Your vehicle will no longer be able to be driven. It's going to sit in your driveway. And after 7 days of not basically driving it, we're going to come over and we're going to basically have the vehicle drive to its hub or wherever it's going to go. And you're going to be left on the side of the road.
And you go, and because, by the way, having that vehicle in your driveway would be against certain, laws or statutes of your wherever you might live, maybe even against the homeowners association agreement that you might
have
signed.
There you go.
Okay, so, but see, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I did, so I'm going to take
it. No, it's good. Bring it up.
Here's the thing. I read a comment. It was in one of the YouTube comments saying, well, Doug, you never say what the big picture – you allude to the big picture, but never really describe what the big picture is. For the love of everything that's holy, we're talking about the big picture here. You're seeing the big picture develop right in front of you. It's the complete subjugation of the human race to this global power structure. And you look, hey, if I get in a car and I'm not driving, there better be, you know, and if I'm going to tell somebody or something where to go, you know, in terms, that person better have, better be a person. A living, breathing human being better have a chauffeur hat on, and a chauffeur. You know, I'm not getting into a car that's got this, you know, self-driving crap. That's just no. This is why I long for the 70s. By the way, back to the 70s. All right, so yeah.
And that's why I want that. That's why I'm trying to paint the picture, and so are you, because people see the same thing. Like, oh, no, this is crazy. No, you have to understand the entire aspect of how our daily lives are going to be controlled once this system rolls out. And that's why I keep telling everybody, don't let this stuff come into your neighborhood. Don't let this stuff come into your city. If they try to put it in your neighborhood, handle it with any means that you feel is constitutionally responsible with freedom. That's, I'm just going to put it at that. Because once this goes sideways, because I mean, you got to understand, anything you do that doesn't fit the narrative. For example, we already see the social credit score in China rolled out.
Oh, yeah.
They want to implement that in the U.S. So you jaywalk, your car gets banned or restricted. What they'll do is they'll restrict it for multiple days. You know what? We saw that you jaywalked across the street. You're fined $50 and you're restricted from using your vehicle for 3 days. You're going to go, what? That's what's going to happen, guys. If you don't believe me, look at what's already happening in China, and you can just take it a step further and see once it's on a full-blown control grid like 6G. So I don't want to keep killing a dead horse, but this is needs to be a dead horse. The 6G needs to be stopped. The 5G needs to be stopped before this stuff rolls out. And that's why I'm so adamant and I bring it up so much with everybody, because this is not going to be what we think it is. And yes, I think 6G will lead into the mark of the beast. People have asked me that. Oh, well, you haven't been real clear on that. I can't be any more clear on that. Yes, I think this is exactly what it is. How else are you not going to be able to buy or sell anything?
There you
Nothing.
Go.
It blatantly says that. You will not be able to buy or sell anything. Means if you have a chip in you, and that's the only way you can do stuff, and you come in and say, hey, I don't want to have a chip. I'm Austin Brower. It goes against my religious beliefs. I'm not going to get a chip. That's fine. You can't purchase a vehicle anymore either. And you can't ride on any public transportation. Well, how
no access to federal buildings? Or
there you go.
You know, yeah.
Okay, well, how am I supposed to go to the store and buy food? Oh, you can walk. Well, when I get to the store, how am I supposed to pay for my food if I can't get into the store or I can't register the register and scan my chip? Sorry, it's not our problem. That's your problem. You're the one that doesn't want to get the chip. This is where it's leading to, and the only way to make a system, and when I was younger, I could never grasp it. I couldn't understand. Saying, how are they going to make no man be able to buy or sell? It doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, that's such a strong statement, and it's very clear in Revelations. There is no interpretation about it that changes it any other way. It's exactly what it says. And it finally clicked a couple years ago when I saw this 5G rollout in the Internet of Things, and I see the Neuralink and all this stuff that's coming out now. This is how it's going to be done, and it's right in front of our faces, Doug, and we're watching literally the history open up and unfold about what we knew was going to occur. We're seeing it now, and most Americans are just want to sit on the couch and eat their Doritos and, oh, you know what, man,
that's right.
What's Kim Kardashian doing? I don't know.
And I think this relates directly to what we started out talking about, the gun issue, the possession of weapons. It's not for hunting. It's for just this kind of thing, the government control over people. And you know, the other thing I'm going to mention too as well is, I believe too in the Christian community, what we're seeing because of all of the deep rifts within the Christian community. I mean, Christian going after Christian. It's just, it's ridiculous. But here's what I see taking place. The safe haven of Christianity is going to be upset by individuals saying, well, my brand of Christianity, that's the right kind. You're not practicing the right kind. So, it's okay to succumb and be subjected to the government power structure, because that's what the Bible tells us to do. And, oh, yeah. Mr. Fundamental Christian over there, you know, I get extra loaf of bread if I turn you into the authorities. So that's exactly what I'm going to do. So you're going to have Christians selling out Christians, and I can see this happening. And I can see how the gun confiscation is tied into this, because with an armed America, they're not going to get too far. And lastly, I worked a case, I don't know, this is probably around 2000, 2001, locally, for a company that owned, it was $1.5 million worth of equipment, the equipment value itself, on a area where there was trees being cleared and for a roadway that was going in. And the Earth Liberation Front came in, and they destroyed $1.5 million worth of equipment. All right, and think about this. The FBI was brought in. They investigated. I was brought in on the insurance side of things to take a look at them, you know, to work with the FBI on the loss. We're going to have electronic vigilantes, I believe. You put a 5G tower up?
Yeah.
Think about what happened with the ELF. Just saying. I don't know.
That's, in my opinion, that's exactly why they want the ability to control everything and not have people defend themselves. Because, I mean, I'm not advocating anybody would ever do this, and I'm not encouraging anything. But you know that, I mean, a 5G tower is not armor protected. Green tip 5.56 ammo, I would imagine, would penetrate straight through it. I'm not advocating that. I've never encouraged people to do that. But you got to think about it from a tyrannical government that's trying to implement a 6G system and roll everything into a mark of the beast system, essentially, which appears that's what they're doing. You don't really want 400 plus million firearms circulating among that population. Because what happens when I go, you know what? I don't like this chip thing. I don't like this 6G thing. I don't like being told what to do by a tyrannical government. I think we need to not go along with it. Well, it makes it really difficult to force people to do stuff when they have weapons. And this is exactly what they're doing in Virginia. They're setting a precedent. They've already done it in California. We already know what they've done over there. California, in my opinion, and I've said this before, in my opinion, they're softening up the West Coast so that as soon as we have the Chinese coming over, and I believe that will happen at some point. I have no idea when. There will be zero resistance on the West Coast, because the Pacific, the West Coast, that will be essentially the main hotspot for any type of invasion from China. The East Coast is obviously much more difficult. And so California is being softened up. China has a Rothschild bank. China is a full-blown communist dictatorship. China has a social credit score. China wants part of America. They already own parts of America. And China, in my opinion, is very much a part of the New World Order, One World Government agenda. So wouldn't it make sense to soften up the main part of where you're going to bring in a large portion of this? And that would make sense with California. And now Virginia is going to be, you know, that's a very strong pro-Second Amendment state. It's always been a constitutional state. So now they're showing that if they can get this passed in Virginia, this will pretty much be the beginning demise of the entire United States. Because once all the other states do it, same thing happened to us in Florida. No, people barely even knew what a red flag gun law was, much less hardly any states actually implemented them. I think there were like half a dozen states that had them, and most of the states didn't even really use them or know what they were. Once we got them in Florida, all these states started to adopt them. Now I think there's like 16 or 17 states, and like you said, about a dozen more ready to follow suit, and they found out real quick after the media exposure of what red flag gun laws were, and they could strip you of your firearm rights with no due process. Hey, that's a pretty good law to put into effect. We have the ability to start disarming Americans legally and not have any recourse from it, man, all right, this is a good idea. Let's start implementing every state. And that's exactly what they're doing now, and it's exactly what they're going to do, especially if they ban the assault weapons, or should I say they illegally ban semi-automatic AR-15 sporting rifles for defensive measures and make you pay a fine to have to keep your gun and register it with the state like a good little obedient slave. No, not okay.
You know, the red flag gun laws, I kind of understand it somewhat. If I squint and kind of look side, I understand the intent, all right? Because no one wants like a Looney Tune crazy, you know, off their rocker person waving around a loaded 44 Magnum. You know,
yeah, exactly.
I get that. I fully, okay, but the red flag gun laws is not – they're always wrapped in something that sounds good, these laws. Oh, boy, this sounds good and we're going to be able. No, that's, you know, if it's for the children or for public safety.
Yep.
It's not for the children and it's not for public safety. Two catchphrases. I mean, you know, it blows my mind. And President Trump being for the, red flag gun laws, you know, I'm disappointed in that. I believe, or I choose to believe, that he, you know, he probably thinks, well, that's a good idea in theory, but in practicality, look, how's everything else working out for us? No. There should be no restrictions. And I think I don't know. It boggles the mind. By the way, folks, Austin Brower, go to healthmasters.com. In fact, in 8-9 minutes from now, go to healthmasters.com. Stop what you're doing. Go to healthmasters.com. There it is on your screen, healthmasters.com. Input at checkout HR5 for 5% off non-sale products. And order today, right now, order today your nutritional supplements, including Ultimate Multiple. The powder is great, by the way. The capsules are great, but the powder is just wonderful. You've got a number of other energy or a number of other options, supplement options as well. The different, like vitamin C. Oh, man, excellent. C is excellent. Excellent. The B, wow. Let me tell you, you want a B, you know, B12 shot. Well, try these B vitamins from healthmasters.com. That'll give you energy, maximum health, maximum energy, and maximum longevity. And this is what we need right now because we're up against a fight and we all need to be healthy and a little bit stronger than we are. And this is the way to do it. So healthmasters.com, HR5, coupon code. All right, Austin, we got about 5, 6, 7, I don't know, a few minutes left.
It's funny you said that with the excellent C, the vitamin C was our buffered vitamin C. Is last week I started getting a little run down over the weekend. I've been pretty much since New Year's, I've been going nonstop. Just the house build picked back up, the business, everything's been going wild over here. I mean, yesterday we had a pipe break in the office, water all over the office. Then I go outside to shut off the main line on the side of the house, the knob breaks off. House is still flooding. The office is still flooding. And it's been a crazy week. But back when I'm alluding to my rabbit trail is that my throat started getting sore. You know, doing shows on a regular basis, doing some guest shows, just constantly go from morning to night. We're either at the house or the office back and forth. And my throat started getting sore, started getting run down. So I took about 4 of the vitamin C, the excellent C, 3 times. So I took them about morning, afternoon, night. And the next day I woke up. Throat was already feeling better, hammered the same thing, and then dumped a little bit more D3 into my dosage. I normally do like a 10,000 every day, every other day. I bumped like 4 of them and also threw in some astragalus that we have and woke up next morning, felt fantastic, completely knocked out. I mean, just beat it like that. And so that's what a lot of people have to understand, that, you know, just because you have health insurance, which I'm sure a lot of people still have health insurance, even though we've gotten rid of the IRS fine on not having health insurance, which that still boggled my mind that was ever even put in the law. But lest I digress, the fact that you don't have to go to the doctor every time you get a sniffle or you get a sore throat.
Yes.
I get so boggled sometimes. People are like, oh, my nose is running. I got a doctor's appointment tomorrow. And I'm like, your nose is running? You're going to the doctor? I'm like, you're probably going to get sicker going to the doctor, getting exposed to stuff. Just take some vitamin C and some D3 and astragalus and I'll knock it out. Oh, I need to see what my doctor has to say about that. I'm like, why don't you ask God Almighty, Jesus Christ, I mean, about that and see what he says. He's probably going to say, go with the natural approach. I'm giving you everything via plants. Work on it. Fix it. I mean, and I'm not saying that doctors aren't good and they can't do good things and they can't fix problems. They can't do surgeries that are life-saving. They can numerous times. But on the other hand, too, you don't have to go to the doctor every single time you get a sniffle or your child gets a sniffle, because in most cases, you go on antibiotics or you go on stuff you don't need to be on, and our bodies are designed to fight stuff off naturally. They're designed to basically build immunity to things. Our immune systems are built for that. And so, I mean, 99% of the time, you take the right supplements or you take a good dose of vitamin C for a couple days at a high dosage that's buffered, it'll knock it out. So I just encourage people to that, you know, have a healthy lifestyle, but if you start getting sick, don't run to the doctor every time, because that's what we've been trained to do. The medical industrial complex has shown us and propagandized us so much to believe that the only thing we can do as soon as we have anything, including a scratch on the back of our hand, is go to the doctor. And it really is far from that. And people have to start doing that, because the more self-sufficient we are, the healthier we are, the more reliant we are on our friends and family and just our surroundings, instead of constantly being reliant on other stuff, we're going to be that much better, especially if something happens, because we're not going to need to go to the doctor every time we turn around, because...
Well, you know, that's fine, except if everyone had health care, because health care is a right of every American. So, okay, if everyone, see, you know, what you'd see is somebody being wheeled in with a sore throat while, you know, while a construction worker is sitting in a chair in the ER. You're being wheeled in the ER with a sore throat and there's a guy with a cooler with his left hand in it because he cut it off in the sawing accident, or was cut off in the sawing accident. And, you know, I can just see this playing out. So even, again, the big picture, the socialized medicine, socialized healthcare, you know, single-payer healthcare, this all ties together, doesn't it? I mean, it's all really subjugating yourself to this ultimate control of a higher authority, and it's not God. Whether it's with your health or with your guns, because my goodness, you can't have a gun. You can't drive a car. You can't do, you just can't have none of this. So, and plus, you better have health insurance. And by the way, I gotta leave right now. Austin, I gotta hurry. I can't talk to you after the show because I gotta go get my flu shot. So you're right, brother. We got about 2 minutes left. Go ahead.
You're spot on with that. And I mean, that's exactly where this is going. So, to the listeners that listen to this show today, if you guys wanted a picture about what's happening in the future, this is it. This show is it. Doug and I can't paint a clear picture on why it's so important to A, maintain your health, be responsible with yourself and take care of your body, take the right supplements, eat the right food. Also, be self-sufficient when it comes to security. Make sure you have whatever types of security you want. I mean, pick it. I mean, we live in America. If you want to have a .44 Magnum for defense, or you want to have pepper spray for defense, I could care less. But have something. Don't be so submissive that you say, oh, if a bad guy breaks in, I'll call the cops. Okay. You know how many times, and I know Doug's seen this enough, and I've seen this so much as well down here in Florida. The cops always show up after the matter in 99% of the situations. They show up basically to take the report and clean up the scene. You are the first responder in your life. That's why I encourage people, you know, I'm a certified first responder. Got years ago, took the classes for months. Be self-sufficient, take supplements, exercise, you know, basically protect your family. And this is what we continue to do, and stand up to bullies. And we're seeing bullies like none other right now in Virginia trying to strip Americans of their rights to be able to defend themselves, Doug. So I just pray that everybody wakes up, and this show hopefully painted a clear enough picture for that.
You know, I think this is probably one of the better shows that we've done together. Not that the others were bad, but I think this really kind of shows the larger picture of everything that's going on. If you don't get it right now, you know, then I don't know what to tell you, but you know, this is not an infomercial for supplements, because frankly, it's up to you. It's up to you. Okay. And if you can't afford supplements, then do exercises. I don't know. You know, just get ready. Just understand what we're facing. That's it. End of story. Understand what we're facing. And it's what's ahead of us. It's a pretty grave scenario that's out there. Austin, I want to thank you for joining me. And I'll tell you what, again, healthmasters.com, your supplements are they make the difference, at least in our lives and our family lives. Healthmasters.com, HR5 is the coupon code. Thanks for coming on, brother.
Thank you, Doug. It's a blessing as always.
All right. Folks, that'll do it. That's it for us this week. Now watch HagmanReport.com this weekend. I'm going to be doing a couple of reports. I've got some things I do need to say. And I've got some things I do need to write. HagmanReport.com, HagmanReportLive.com. Don't forget, folks, coffee. Have a cup of coffee. I'm telling you, life is too short for bad coffee. HagmanStore.com. Till next time, God bless.